The State Legislative Redistricting Subcommittee will come to order. DJ, please call the roll.
Chair Byrd.
Here.
Vice Chair Robinson.
Here.
Ranking Member Daly.
Here.
Representatives Arrington.
Here.
Barnaby.
Here.
Bell.
Here.
Brannan.
Here.
Chambliss. Garrison.
Here.
Hart.
Here.
Hawkins has been excused. Manny.
Here.
McLean.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Persons Maleka.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Kant has been excused. Valdez.
Good morning, present.
Woodson.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, DJ, and members, welcome on this fine Thursday morning. And a few reminders before we begin, please silence all electronic devices. And if for any members of the public wishing to make public comment and that have not filled out a form online before the meeting, please fill out a form and turn it in to the sergeant staff. Also, as a reminder for our members and presenters, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking and off when you are finished. Members, redistricting is a once-in-a-decade process. I am honored that Speaker Sprouse and Chair Leak have entrusted with me the responsibility to serve as chairman of the State Legislative Redistricting Subcommittee, and I look forward to working with each of you throughout this process. I would first and foremost like to introduce Vice Chair Robinson and Ranking Member Daly, who will be my partners in spearheading this process. I would now like to introduce the redistricting staff. Our staff director is Lita Kelly, policy analyst is Sam Wagner, and DJ Ellerkamp is our administrative assistant. Additional team members who are currently in other subcommittee meetings include Jason Pareda, our chief map drawer, Karen Dearden, external affairs chief, and Kyle Langan, policy analyst. As you look around at your fellow committee members and those of the redistricting committee and our other subcommittee, you will realize that we have over 50% of the House, 62 members in total, involved in this committee process. We also have all corners of the state represented, all the way from the Panhandle to Northeast Florida to the I-4 corridor to South Florida and the Keys, with urban and rural areas represented. Members, Chair Leak gave a similar educational presentation yesterday at yesterday's big redistricting committee. I will be presenting some similar information today, as we feel is it important to ensure that all of our committees have the same foundational knowledge as we move forward in this process. Education is a key to the success of this committee. The last time we met on the House map was in 2012. Fast forward 10 years and the vast majority of the House is new to redistricting, including myself. So I want to start by giving some context. While the House map was constitutionally upheld in 2012, there were successful court challenges to both the congressional and Senate plans throughout the subsequent years. It is important to remember that during the 2012 redistricting cycle, the members and staff were implementing two brand new substantial constitutional amendments. They did not have the benefit of historical reference or court precedents to guide them through their process. However, now we do. The Speaker and Chair Leak have made it consistently and abundantly clear that the House will conduct this process in compliance with the Florida Constitution and relevant state and federal legal standards, including relevant court precedent. Now I want to point out, only five members in our entire chamber were part of the last redistricting cycle, and only three of them were in the House. That creates a noteworthy responsibility for our committees to undertake a thorough educational effort to ensure that everyone has the understanding they need to be able to propose, analyze, and most importantly, vote on legally compliant boundaries. Throughout our initial committee meetings this fall, we are going to build this foundational knowledge for members of the committees, including such things as the methodologies that guide how we can draw and analyze districts and the related policy decisions that we will face as we draw and debate boundary lines. The committee's first lesson begins today with the explanation of redistricting terminology and an overview of the U.S. Census Bureau. We will also demonstrate for you the newly launched, this was just yesterday afternoon, www.floridaredistricting.gov website that contains resources for you and your constituents. In subsequent committee weeks, we will train members in our map drawing software. This training will teach members how to use the software to draw districts, how to use the reporting tools to analyze what you drew, and how to activate advanced tools within the software to make drawing as efficient as possible. We will also provide members with an understanding of the legal landscape surrounding redistricting. This landscape will be true to established law, not third-party interpretation. And then, once that foundational understanding is established across our committees, we will begin workshopping maps. It is crucial for members to understand how these activities and decision points may interact with one another and how they should be weighted when considering where boundary lines are placed. Without the proper context for members to understand the issues and standards, we are not properly preparing ourselves to take votes on compliant district lines. Redistricting is a precise and technical process, and creating this framework is also consistent with Speaker Sproul's approach of education, training, and preparation. Before we get into the substance of today's meeting, I want to address a couple of additional items. First, let's address records retention. The House continues to urge all members to retain all records relating to redistricting. These records can include documents and correspondence, including email and texts, regardless of whether sent or received on your public or personal devices or accounts. The House also continues to urge all members to avoid private conversations about redistricting with individuals who have a vested interest in the outcome of that process, and to keep their comments about the redistricting process in alignment with the constitutional standards that apply to redistricting plans. If you have questions regarding this guidance, please reach out to the House General Counsel's office. Next, I want to address committee procedures. While the redistricting subject matter may be new to many of you, the filing of bills and amendments will follow traditional House processes we are all familiar with. If you wish to submit a map as a bill, it will count towards your bill allotment, and you are subject to submission and filing deadlines. If you wish to amend a committee work product or other member's bill, those amendments will be heard through the standard committee process and are subject to the same respective deadlines. As members of our subcommittee, we will propose and analyze maps in our committee of jurisdiction and then pass maps to the big redistricting committee for consideration. Members, the last thing I will touch on is expectations for map submissions. As I've mentioned, the House expects transparency in how input for our work product is received, reviewed, and considered. You should not be naive to the fact that external entities and individuals want to influence this process in a way that may not be in compliance with the law. Similar to the House's high standards for lobbyist disclosures, the goal of transparency is to bring awareness to the process of individuals who may be trying to assert their undue influence into our process. If you choose to submit a map as part of this redistricting process, you should be prepared to disclose any and all individuals who assisted you in creating the map. Similarly, submissions by members of the public will be accompanied by a form inquiring about groups or individuals with whom they collaborated and whether any form of compensation was received in return for comments or submissions. The work we have ahead of us is exciting, but we cannot overlook the gravity of what we are charged to do. It is quite the undertaking. This important work only occurs every 10 years, and it is worth noting the legislature has only two constitutional requirements: to pass a balanced budget and to redistrict. And we should all be honored to carry out this responsibility. I look forward to working with all of you to proceed to produce legally compliant maps that will serve the people of Florida. Before we begin today's presentation, are there any initial questions on what I've already covered? All right, seeing none, we will now launch into 2022 redistricting and U.S. Census Bureau overview. Today's has four topics on the agenda: redistricting overview, U.S. Census Bureau overview, Florida population overview, and a demonstration of the website. And members, just so you know, I think the way we'll proceed is as we conclude each of the four items on the agenda, we'll take questions at that time. So, you know, if you have any questions, we'll take them after 1, 2, 3, and 4. All right. Members, what we're covering today are the initial foundations for everything that we will discuss in this committee. During today's presentation, we're going to cover some of the basic terminology you'll hear repeatedly over the next several months, provide everyone background on the U.S. Census Bureau's role in the redistricting process, including where our data comes from, discuss the results of the 2020 census, and what Florida looks like today, as well as be able to show you our very recently debuted redistricting website. So what is redistricting? Why are we doing it now, and what are we required to do? Terminology. So reapportionment and redistricting are different. Reapportionment is the redistribution of seats in the U.S. House of Representatives among the 50 states based on the decennial census. Each state gets at least one seat. Redistricting is the redrawing of congressional and state legislative district boundaries, usually after a decennial census. Other entities can redistrict, such as local governments, courts, and school boards. These two terms are commonly used interchangeably, but there is an important distinction. Federal law. Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution states, "The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof." The relevant portion of the 14th Amendment states that one person, one vote. And Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act states, "No voting qualification or prerequisite to voting or standard practice or procedure shall be imposed or applied in a manner which results in a denial or abridgment of the right of any citizen of the United States to vote on account of race or color." Next. All right. Florida law. Article 3, Section 16 of the Florida Constitution states the following. It directs the legislature at its regular session in the second year following each decennial census, in this case 2022, to conduct redistricting of state legislative boundaries. It identifies that the Senate must be comprised of 30 to 40 senatorial districts, 80 to 120 representative districts. Districts shall be contiguous and consecutively numbered, and provides directives and timelines for establishing new districts. So this section of law that establishes the overall timeline and gives authority for legislative redistricting in Florida to the legislature, it also has some very basic standards we must follow. The Florida Constitution does not dictate a timeline for redistricting congressional boundaries. As a matter of tradition and efficiency, the legislature undertakes both state legislative and congressional redistricting at the same time. State legislative boundaries are passed as a joint resolution. Congressional boundaries are passed as a bill. This means congressional maps go directly to the governor for signature, like any other bill, whereas House and Senate maps may undergo a Florida Supreme Court review. We'll discuss this process further in a few slides. Okay. This slide and the next one I want to pause on for a minute. Article 3, Section 20 and 21 were added to the Constitution, that's the Florida Constitution, in 2010, and the bottom line is, these are a part of the Florida Constitution, and like with any other part of the Constitution, we have all taken an oath to follow them. I want this committee to be fully engaged, aware, and educated. It is important to understand not only redistricting at a conceptual level, but the context of the legal guideposts, such as our constitutional standard that we must follow as well. Within our first couple of interim meetings, committee meetings, we will thoroughly examine these standards. This decade, we have the added benefit of history and court precedent, something the prior decade's members and staff did not. So we have a better understanding than the legislature did 10 years ago as to how we should implement these amendments. So let's take a first look. The Florida Supreme Court has made it clear that these standards have two distinct tiers. Tier one prohibits favoring or disfavoring any political party or incumbent. Tier one also protects racial and language minority groups' ability to elect candidates of their choice using language similar to what is in Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Tier two standards must be nearly as equal in population as practicable, be compact, and follow existing geographical and political boundaries. As was mentioned on the previous slide, Tier 1 standards take priority over two-tier standards in case of conflict. Within each tier, the standards are equal amongst one another. These are other Florida statutes that are relevant to this process. Article 3, Section 16 of the Florida Constitution also states reapportionment shall occur following a decennial census, with the implication being that data should be used as most updated. Next, the redistricting timeline. What is shown here are important dates for what has already happened in this process, where we are now, and the important dates for what is to come in the future. As you can see, we are still in the middle of this process, and the bulk of our work is just beginning. Yeah, members, what I'm going to ask you to do, instead of reading each of the timelines that are indicated on the slide, instead of reading each of those individually, I'll have you take note of, you know, when we start session on January 11th and when we conclude on sine die and the various time requirements we have in completing the redistricting process. Because Article 3, Section 16 of the Florida Constitution that states that Florida will approve new districts in the second year after the decennial census, we are still on track to complete this process on time and on schedule. Members, at this time, we will take our first pause for questions from the committee members. Are there any questions? All right. Seeing none, we will now continue to Section 2, U.S. Census Bureau. In this next section, we'll look at the role of that the U.S. Census Bureau plays in this process. The U.S. Census Bureau is charged with conducting the decennial census with the mission statement for the Bureau being, quote, count everyone once, only once, and in the right place for the decennial census. Decennial census means the enumeration or complete count of every whole person, which is conducted every 10 years. Apportionment counts, the number of seats each of the 50 states receives in the U.S. House of Representatives. Redistricting data, this is the PL data referring to Public Law 94-171, which directs the Bureau to deliver to the states the product that contains summary statistics on population, demographics, and housing. Population counts for the total population and for the population 18 years and over are presented by race and by Hispanic or Latino origin, and for the total group quarters population by major group quarters type. We will specifically explore this item further in a couple of slides. Relevant federal law. Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution states this is the section that requires the decennial census be conducted and that the count of whole persons be in an actual enumeration of those people. This means an actual count of every person. Title 13 establishes the U.S. Census Bureau as the agency that is to conduct the decennial census and requires them to provide the data accurately and in a manner that protects the privacy of those being counted. Public Law 94-171 directs the Bureau to deliver to the states the product that contains summary statistics on population, demographics, and housing, population counts for the total population, and for the population 18 years and over are presented by race and by Hispanic or Latino origin, and for the total group quarters population by major group quarters type. Okay. All right. So how does the U.S. Census Bureau conduct the census? This is a sample image of the 2020 census form that was mailed out at the beginning of 2020. And you'll note on the slide that the first census was conducted in 1790 and is conducted every 10 years. The decennial census is the basis for apportionment counts, federal funding allocation, and redistricting. The 2020 census is the 24th decennial census and first ever to be offered online. The 2020 presented unique challenges to us all, and the U.S. Census Bureau was no exception. You can see here that the whole process to conduct and tabulating the census results were delayed in 2020 due to COVID-19, wildfires, hurricanes, and other factors. I'm not going to walk through every item on this graphic, but we included it to illustrate the timeline challenges the Census Bureau faced last year. Their challenges resulted in the delay of the states receiving apportionment counts and redistricting data, and while that is unfortunate, these delays did not delay our timeline here in Florida. We are still on track and on schedule to complete our redistricting process during the next regular session, which is what our Constitution instructs us to do, despite these delays by the U.S. Census Bureau. Florida's total enumeration was consistent with the national average, with 99.9% of the total households for which the Census Bureau has a record were counted in the 2020 census. As we also saw on the last slide, there are two main phases of data collection during a census: self-response rate and non-response follow-up. Self-response is an individual completing the census questionnaire on their own, whether by mail, phone, or online. Non-response follow-up is the Census Bureau going back into the communities and using administrative records to help complete the outstanding questionnaires. You'll sometimes hear this latter process referred to as imputation. What is reassuring is that Florida's total enumeration was 99.9%, and this means that the count here in Florida was in line with the national average's completeness. The self-response rate and non-response follow-up rates in Florida were consistent with other states and with the overall national average. Next slide is apportionment counts. As we discussed before, Florida will be getting 28 congressional districts, one more than Florida had in 2010. This slide also shows you the ideal population for each district within each different type of map. For example, the ideal population is calculated by taking the 2020 population divided by the number of districts in a respective plan. These numbers are guideposts for our districts as we begin drawing maps. So now that we've talked about the Census Bureau's process, let's discuss the types of Census Bureau data we use specifically for redistricting. PL 94-171 redistricting data is a detailed population data set and the basis for us to analyze and draw district boundaries. The geography support products details the geographical landscape of Florida. The two buckets of data and products work together to enable our redistricting process. PL 94-171 redistricting data, or PL data for short, is broken down in the different census geography layers, the smallest being called blocks. This is detailed population data that is grouped by total population, voting age population, and is then grouped by race and ethnic groups. The data set also contains group quarters data. While this data is provided as part of the redistricting data, it has minimal involvement with the redistricting process. However, demographers and statisticians use this data for other analysis. The same data was delivered in a legacy format on August 12th, and the same data was then again delivered officially in a more user-friendly format last week on September 16th. The census questionnaire asks a variety of questions. However, there are two that are specifically important for redistricting purposes. The first is question 8, shown on the screen, which asks respondents to identify their ethnicity. This results in two categories, Hispanic or Latino, and not Hispanic or Latino. Question 9, as shown, asks a respondent to identify their race, resulting in six categories. Those categories are American Indian or Alaska Native, Asian, Black or African American, Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, white, or other race. If you look closely at the census questionnaire, you can see how the Census Bureau has provided some examples of what is contained within each of those racial categories. If a respondent selects multiple categories using guidance from the U.S. Office of Management and Budget, they are counted in each racial category as they selected. You will see these categories again from questions 8 and 9 as we go through the software and understand the legal requirements, especially surrounding protecting benchmark minority districts. Geography support products. Now that we've talked about the population data as collected and how people can identify themselves, let's talk about geography. The geography support products are produced by the Census Bureau and essentially break down the landscape of Florida into different geographical units. These units are then used to draw districts. Census blocks are the smallest unit of geography defined by the U.S. Census Bureau. They range in size from individual parcels of land to city blocks to larger areas. Regardless of geographic size or population, they serve as the building blocks for all other units of geography. We'll take a closer look at this as the committee as this committee through the map drawing application, you will be able to see firsthand how these units of geography and the associated population counts give us a detailed picture of Florida's population. So before moving on, do we want any questions on where we are so far? All right. Okay. Next, Florida Populations Overview. Now that we've covered a lot of the terminology and baseline details, let's actually take a look at some of Florida's top-line results from the 2020 census. Here you can see Florida's 67 counties and which ones grew in population. The darker the green indicates a greater percentage of change. So that the dark green doesn't mean they're the largest counties. It means they have the largest percentage of change. The light-colored counties lost population when compared to the 2010 population counts. The counties with the biggest increases were mostly in the Central Florida area. Many of the more rural counties in Florida lost population, which was consistent with national trends. The next slide shows the counties with over 20% growth that we saw on the previous slide. Those would include Osceola, St. John's, Sumter, Walton, Lake, Orange, Santa Rosa, Manatee, Nassau, Lee, Pasco, Flagler, and Polk. The next slide contains counties that lost population that we saw on the previous slides. Those are Gulf, Hardy, Lafayette, Calhoun, Madison, Glades, Gadsden, Hamilton, Jackson, Liberty, Taylor, DeSoto, Jefferson, Putnam, Holmes, Okeechobee, and Bradford. The next slide contains Florida's top 10 largest counties. These are the top 10 largest counties. They are the same 10 counties as in 2010. However, Duval overtook Pinellas for the number 6 spot this last decade. And so the top 10 largest counties are Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, Hillsborough, Orange, Duval, Pinellas, Lee, Polk, and Brevard. These are the smallest counties in the state, and they also are comprised of the same 10 counties as in 2010. Liberty, Lafayette, Glades, Franklin, Calhoun, Hamilton, Gulf, Jefferson, Union, and Dixie. Florida municipalities. As of April 1st, 2020, Florida has 412 incorporated municipalities compared to the 411 in the last decade. During the decade, Estero, Indiantown, and Westlake became incorporated. Hastings and Islandia became unincorporated. Although currently unincorporated, Wekiwatchie was still an incorporated area in January 2020 when the U.S. Census Bureau finalized their geography support products, as well as on April 1st, 2020 when the 2020 census was conducted. Therefore, it appears in this decade's census data set as an incorporated city. This slide shows the 10 largest cities in Florida. This decade, Cape Coral jumps into the top 10 after being ranked 11th in 2020. So our largest municipalities are Jacksonville, Miami, Tampa, Orlando, St. Petersburg, Hialeah, Port St. Lucie, Tallahassee, Cape Coral, and Fort Lauderdale. This is a similar slide to the county slide, but shows how each house district changed in population. The darker green indicates larger percentage growth, again, seeing notable growth depicted along the I-4 corridor. Florida Senate districts. Moving on to the state Senate graphic, similar patterns as the state House slide, but obviously at a less granular level. And once again, we see the growth throughout the I-4 corridor. Florida congressional districts. Once again, you can see the darker green is the areas of growth, the lighter areas of depopulation. Once again, we're going to pause for any questions at this time. Any questions? See, everybody's lively on a Thursday morning. Everybody's ready to get home. All right. So now we are going to go to the redistricting website demonstration. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to our staff director, Lita Kelly. Lita, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. DJ is going to assist me with this. So while she flips over to our website, we are very excited. Yesterday, we were able to launch a joint House and Senate product. We have a public website available as well as our public map drawing application. The Florida House and the Florida Senate elected to use ESRI redistricting online application for the 2022 redistricting cycle. This application is web-based, which means you don't have to have any software downloaded onto your computer or tablet. It's accessible from anywhere by anyone. And it uses the latest census data so that everyone has the most updated data and the most updated technology to draw maps as we go throughout this process. Here, as you can see up on the screen, is our homepage for floridaredistricting.gov. We have a little intro note here, and DJ, if you'd scroll down to the bottom of the screen, what's really great about this website is we have a lot of interactivity. So DJ, if you click on that blue explore button, the maps that are shown here on the homepage are similar to what Chair Byrd just walked through. They're House, Senate, congressional maps, as well as counties and cities. And DJ, if you just click on a district there, any district, whenever you click on it, it actually pulls up the current numbers associated with that district. So the ideal population, the total population that it currently sits at, and the difference between those numbers. So again, trying to make this information very readily accessible for folks. DJ, let's move on to the About tab. So here, similar to some of the information we just walked through in this committee, we wanted to make sure everyone has a foundational knowledge of what Florida is charged to do. Every state has very unique requirements for redistricting as well as their timeline, and so we wanted to make this accessible. You saw up at the top the population chart that we walked through, as well as some of the legal references for the Voting Rights Act, as well as obviously our Florida constitutional standards. DJ, as you continue to scroll down the page, we also included similar graphics that you guys saw about process and timeline. Let's go to the House Committee page. So obviously this website is external to myfloridahouse.gov, so we wanted to be able to have a way that everyone could still access relevant information to this committee process. So as you can see, DJ, scrolling through here, we have our lovely committee leadership displayed on the page, and all those icons right below them link back to existing resources on myfloridahouse.gov. Additionally, as you do those drop-down menus right below there, they have access to any press release or memos that are put out about redistricting, as well as accessibility to appear in committee, track bills, and also find their representatives as well. The bottom section rounds it out with other important calendar dates and overall House procedural dates as well. DJ, would you flip over to myfloridahouse.gov right now? So we also wanted to point out, we've placed a link to floridaredistricting.gov on the homepage of myfloridahouse.gov. So again, if your constituents or yourselves or your staff find, they can't remember the website or looking where to go, we have it prominently displayed there so that they're interlinkable. And again, trying to make it as user-friendly as possible. And go back to Florida Redistricting. Thank you. Let's go to the Resources tab, please. And I'll note the Senate committee also has a similar page to My Florida House with their chamber's respective resources. So this is a pretty cool feature. This top section right here, we've taken a historical look at the Congressional, House, and Senate maps. So DJ, if you'll flip over to that other tab, just we preloaded it. This is what's called a story map. And so as you scroll throughout, the map itself actually updates with the districts that were drawn for that respective decade. So there's a little synopsis about what process took place during that decade, and then as you go, you can actually see how the maps evolved. We take this all the way back to the 1980 redistricting cycle. DJ, you can go back to the website. And just continuing to scroll down on this page, additional resources, a redistricting glossary. We've gone through several terms today, but there are more out there, and you will come to know the ones that we've covered today quite well. We also linked back to Direct Census Bureau products so that those of people looking for, our source data or source terminology, whatever the case may be, they have easy access to that as well. The Get Involved tab, please. So I think this is a tab all of you will become very familiar with. So for constituents and members of the public who are looking to get involved by drawing maps, this is the page that you'll direct them to. As you can see here, very prominently displayed, click here to draw and submit maps is where any member of the public can go and create a profile and access our Esri Redistricting online application. They can draw, submit maps to committees through that process. So again, this is a page I'm sure you'll become quite familiar with. Along those lines, as you continue to scroll down the page, we've included a variety of help tutorials. So we have a quick start guide here, which is kind of, again, a fast, how do I get started with the software, how do I log in, create a profile, as well as a help manual that goes into much more detail. It's step-by-step functionality of how you use each individual tool within the drawing application. We've also taken and created some of those materials into videos, which do have closed captioning enabled as well. And then DJ, just to round it out on the last page, this again is just a contact us page. Again, this product, as well as our software, is a joint effort by the House and the Senate. So we have a help@floridaredistricting.gov email address for individuals that are looking for help, specifically, you know, with software or additional questions that they may have. They can email us, and both committee staffs work to get back to constituents in a timely manner. Mr. Chair, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
So members, at this time, today's presentation is concluded. Are there any questions about anything that we discussed today? Ranking Member Daly, you're recognized.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's not a question. If I may, I'd just like to make a few quick remarks. And I know that you and Chairman Leek and the Speaker are honorable and many of your word. And with that in mind, I look forward to, and as I know we all do, an open and transparent process where we want to avoid even the appearance of impropriety. Members, as you already know, and as the chairman already touched on, what we're about to do is one of the most important things we do as a body and is actually a pillar of our democracy. So I look forward to working with the chair and the committee to draw fair maps that comport with the Florida Constitution. And with that, thank you for the presentation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ranking Member Daly. Representative Snyder, do you have a question? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we talk about, you know, members of the public drawing and submitting maps, can you explain a little bit about what does that mean? Where does it go? What is that?
Lita, I'm going to ask you to answer that question. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for that question. So members, once they go into the application, you know, they'll have created their profile and constructed whatever map they'd like to share. There's an actual submit button within the application, so they'll submit that. In turn, that comes to the committee. It actually comes through the joint email account that we have. We get a notification. From there, we work with them to fill out their submission form that accompanies it. And then on the back end, we're actually able to pull that map. So it's an image of the map as well as what's called a shape file. It's the actual drawing file for it and all the associated reports with that map. Those in turn will be posted on a new tab that will be debuting in the future, available on the website. So everything that the public submits for map purposes, drawing purposes, and the reports will be posted there in a sortable format so everyone can go and see what the public's posted. Thank you.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member. My question has to do with us being in the committee, we are going to be bombarded with questions from other people who would want to know. Are there any specific questions that we are forbidden from answering or not?
Lita, I'll let you take that one as well.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. As far as forbidden from answering, I'd say no. I think one word of caution that Chair Byrd touched on is being able to make sure that conversations are in alignment with the constitutional standards. I think especially the responsibility to not favor or disfavor political parties or incumbents, you know, weighs very heavily as we kind of move forward. So I would keep your conversations in alignment with that, but obviously you guys have a responsibility to help and instruct your constituents as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The page is not, 16, I believe. It's listing a non-response follow-up, which is 36.1%, and that's for the Florida average. For the national average, it's 32.9%, which shows a closeness between the two percentages. Are those the one who were not, did we do a follow-up on those, or what was the conclusion based on those people who did not respond? And also, do we have anything in there to do better in the next 10 years or put some recommendations on as to how we're going to reach those people in order to make sure our response rate is a little bit higher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So this is part of the process that the U.S. Census Bureau conducts. So this is outside the scope of this committee or even the Florida legislature. Mm-hmm. I want to put two puzzle pieces together. So the first step of the Census Bureau's collection process is a self-response rate. So this is when they mail out the census questionnaire. As Chair Byrd mentioned, this is the first time it was ever offered online. And so individuals have the ability to fill out their questionnaire, complete the census online. That's the self-response portion. The Census Bureau then looks at who didn't respond to it, and they say, hey, you know, we have to make sure these folks are counted. So they'll sometimes send census takers back into the field or use administrative records to kind of help piece together the puzzle pieces. So when we're looking at that non-response follow-up rate, that's in coordination with the self-response follow-up rate. That's what leads us to that 99.9% of Floridians were counted, which is extraordinarily high. Thank you.
I was referring to the Florida ones being so close compared to the national average. So I wanted to know, is there anything in place to address the Florida piece since it's so close to the national one? That's where I was going.
So, Representative Woodson, it's the Census Bureau, the federal government, that does this. So that's not something that we as the state conduct. They do that. But once again, that 99.9% accuracy, so those people are not being missed. And I don't know what the historical non-responsive rate on the first request is. I mean, we could probably get that. But you know, I think that the takeaway is that 99.9% of the people in Florida at the time the census was taken were included, and we didn't miss anybody in that. Follows the national average.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Chambliss, you're recognized for a question.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Again, as people do present us with different things, whether it be email, text, phone, mail, and we're maybe unsure of whether or not we should even acknowledge receipt of it, like, for example, similar to like ethics with our bills or things like that, is there a who should we contact? Who's our clearinghouse before we entertain the conversation, just to make sure that we're safe?
Sure, absolutely. Great question. You know, once again, records retention is critical, so retain everything that you get. We have an outstanding staff. They are here to serve you. If you have any questions on how to respond to any given inquiry, contact them, and they'll be more than happy to either help craft your response or help you and how to respond. I know none of us want to ignore a constituent. We also are mindful of the ethical considerations. We don't want to say something incorrect. So that's what staff is here to help you with. Anything else? All right, Representative Saltzman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to follow up on a comment from Representative Woodson. I'm a former census enumerator, and I just was going to say that that percentage of people that where we have to do the follow-up, I would argue that that's the more accurate number than the initial response rate, because they actually send people door to door to the field and gather that information and verify. So it's if you have questions about the process, not related to here, but that, I'm happy to answer anybody's questions if they're wondering how that works.
Thank you, Representative Saltzman. I never cease to be amazed at the experience of the members of the Florida House. So thank you for that offer of help. Anyone else with any questions? Anyone else? All right. Now we'll move to public comment. And I would remind the public to keep comments on the presentation and overview today. And please address your questions through the chair. First, we have Jonathan Weber, Florida Conservation Voters, Inc. Mr. Weber, you are recognized.
Good morning. Thank you so much. My name is Jonathan Weber. I'm the Deputy Director of Florida Conservation Voters. You should be delighted to know that many of your fellow Floridians are excited for the work you have ahead of you. There are many people who are looking forward to meaningful engagement with this process in the weeks and the months ahead. We, of course, believe in maximum public participation in their government. Unfortunately, true meaningful engagement is hard when two of the redistricting committees meet at the exact same time. So I do respectfully request that you please ask the speaker or whoever is in charge of the setting the committee times to please schedule the state ledge and congressional redistricting meetings at separate times so that Floridians can fully engage in this process. The people of Florida deserve the opportunity to weigh in on both meetings in real time and shouldn't have to pick and choose which meeting to attend. Obviously, I like you all better because I picked you guys first, so please don't tell the congressional members. But I don't have to make that choice again. So thank you so much. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. And next we have Richard Templin, Florida AFL-CIO. And I do not see Mr. Templin. He may have gone to the Congressional Redistricting Committee, but we will note his submission of a comment card. Is there anyone else from the public wishing to comment? All right. Seeing none, Mr. Weber, once again, thank you for your comments. And members, thank you for your questions and input. I hope you found today's materials educational and a solid first step in this journey. A quick housekeeping note regarding the map drawing application that was launched yesterday. Committee staff will be reaching out over the next couple of days to provide you with your pre-registered login credentials. I encourage you to take time to explore our new website and familiarize yourself with our map drawing application. And one word on the committee, I mean, they, in the short time that I've gotten to work with them, they are all outstanding, highly educated, knowledgeable individuals on this process. Use them, reach out to them. You know, there are no bad questions. Make sure that as this is one of the most important things that you will do in your time in the legislature, make sure that as you move through this process that you are fully informed and don't hesitate to utilize the staff that the speaker has given us. And also keep your eyes open for an email about an upcoming Legislator University for additional training on the map drawing application. For those of you traveling home, safe travels, and thank you. This concludes our committee agenda for today. And Representative Maney moves we rise. We are concluded.